Blog Talk Radio.
As we speak, we certainly need devotion. It seems that as we speak, they're building an unscalable wall around the White House. And this man that they call their president seems to be pouring fuel on the flames. So you must take precaution. And that precaution is get connected with Yah. Take an ex-fool's advice today. When you don't have Yah with you all the time, something could come up and slip beneath your radar and you snap, crack, or pop. So that's why it is urgent and essential that you pray. That you pray for the Most High guidance, directing and ordering your step, and keep you in the right path. As I said, you can get thrown off sometimes by some people. But be that as it may, don't look for any trouble. Don't look to start any trouble. But you must, under all costs, protect yourselves, you know, when it comes to something like that. You see, the respectability of this country has been thrown off. Everybody sees it for what it is. Sort of like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. You know that old story. Dr. Jekyll wanted to present a form of respectability, nobility, being a doctor. But deep down inside, he had this alter ego, which was called Mr. Hyde. See, Mr. Hyde didn't care about what nobody thought. It's what I want, when I want, how I want it. And I'd be damned if I don't take it from you. Maybe kill you if I want to. It's just who I am. Truth be told, in regards to Dr. Jekyll and his alter ego, they were one and the same, just like this country. One and the same. Both Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde were bad. Because if it wasn't for Dr. Jekyll, there wouldn't be no alter ego, Mr. Hyde. So what I'm saying is this. Make sure you're connected to Yah and directed by Yah, so you don't get thrown off. Also, follow the CDC guidelines. Do the best you can with what you can. I called my daughters. I didn't actually call them. I texted them a message. I told them to stay off the streets. It's okay. Okay, Daddy. And I'm going to take my own counsel. Not unless the Most High call me out in a dream. I'm going to stay off the streets. Because as I said, things seem to be going to hell in a handbasket. That's why it's urgently needed that you need the devotion. And how do you get that devotion? You get it by study. And once you've accumulated in your studies, you get it by the application of your studies, which we're about to get into. But I wanted to bring that to your attention because so much is going on in these United States, this Western Hemisphere. As I said, Dr. Jekyll has thrown off all signs of respectability. Mr. Hyde is in total command. Oh, it's true. There's no signs of justice, equality, respectability, nobility, anything else. You see, Mr. Hyde has always been Dr. Jekyll. Dr. Jekyll just lied to himself, just like this country. Lied to themselves, saying they were noble, saying they were just, saying they were equal. But in actuality, that was just a facade. Now, if Mr. Hyde is out to close it, all bets off. So be careful tomorrow. Get that devotion. Get that devotion by your studies. So come along with us on our studies so you can have something to hold on to. Because believe you me, I suspect that you're going to need it. That being said, I'm going to bring my brother and friend on, Cartrell, before we get started in our studies. Cartrell, may the Most High bless you, brother. Your mic is hot. Shalom.
All praise to the Holy One of Israel, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. Shalom, family. Shalom, Brother Yam Sufari. May the Most High bless you.
Thank you very much, my brother and friend.
Yeah, I don't know how to follow up behind that. except to say that the American dream is our nightmare.
Oh,
and the nightmare is starting to hit everybody.
Yep. It's true, brother. It's true.
But we should have learned from the Native Americans that, you know, the people that rule this land now speak with a forked tongue. And we complaining about it now. Like
mm-hmm.
they really believe what they were saying in their Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and whatever documents they got on paper about who they wanted to, you know, benefit from the American dream. It was only for them.
Exactly.
Called white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. White
exactly.
Anglo-Saxon Protestant men. They didn't even want their women included.
No.
So, when you go into the history, which they don't really teach you, it's real deep, because that's what they're trying to get back to. They call us three-fifths of a human, and they call the Native American savages.
Exactly.
And then by divine right, they were sent here to rule this land. That's their
exactly.
motto. That's their M.O. That's why
exactly.
they're so passionate. And Donald Trump is bringing it out. I mean,
right.
you know.
What do they call it, Contra? Divine providence.
Yeah. Divine providence. That's what they called it.
Mm-hmm. Right. But always.
It is divine providence, but
right.
there comes a point where, you know, they have to get off the train ride. Because,
mm-hmm.
yeah, they
right.
were meant to be here by divine providence to
mm-hmm.
punish the children of Israel, but
mm-hmm.
that train ride is over for them. So now it's their turn to be judged by the creator
mm-hmm.
of heaven and earth and to take that cup of fury that we read about in the prophecies.
Exactly.
How they gonna deal with it?
Mm-hmm.
And we see they little crazy in the head. They acting like they ain't taking a cup and sipping it. At least Donald Trump is.
All of country, all of them. They ride around trying to intimidate people like it's 1965, 1955, 1945, 1935, 1925, 1915, 1865. They're still trying to intimidate the people. They don't realize.
They're sipping that cup. They're
right.
sipping that cup, too.
Right. They don't realize, Katria. They can't go back. You got to
mm-hmm.
come forward. You got to come forward.
When you look at it, who we dealing with? Half America is on methadone.
Mm-hmm.
The other half is on opioids.
Mm-hmm.
So they're young men. They're out in the street. Crack addicts and opioid addicts and methadone
mm-hmm.
addicts.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just a plague of corona. There's a lot of things that are plaguing them because they're divided against themselves.
Exactly. Exactly.
And we're just watching the crumbling of the fourth kingdom.
Yeah.
Like
and that's
Daniel
why.
Said.
Yeah. Well, that's why I say, Contrail, the all signs of Dr. Jekyll has disappeared. And Mr. Hyde is in total command, total control. Total control. You know, they don't have to drink their elixir of lies anymore. They actually believe the lies. So Mr. Hyde is in total control. There's no respectability, no facade of nobility, no facade of honesty, justice, truth in the American way. It's all Mr. Hyde. It's what I want, what I want, what I want it, and you better lack it, and you better give it to me. Because I come to your community and take it. It's true, Contrail. It's true, my fellow student.
For me, I consider them all Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, Dr. Frankenstein. Because what does Dr. Jekyll do? Will he operate on himself to become like a superhuman being, which is what most
exactly.
scientists try to do? They go
exactly.
outside of creation, genetically modify what the Most High has done. How dare
right.
y'all?
Yeah.
Mixing species, you mixing insects and spiders
mm-hmm.
into goats, into their
mm-hmm.
genes so you could come up with some silk. How dare
yeah.
y'all? What are y'all doing?
They're doing a little bit too much, Andrea. A little bit
what?
Too much. They're doing
a little bit too much. A little bit too much?
Much.
Oh, Lord have mercy. I think they've reached the brink where they brought all of humanity to the edge of the cliff. You're talking about
mm-hmm.
nuclear weapons and
mm-hmm.
all type of new technology that could destroy a planet. You're talking about anti-gravity. I don't know if most people know about that, but with the Hadron
mm-hmm.
Collider, they discovered an element called anti-gravity,
mm-hmm.
which they could say to be the most powerful weapon they've ever discovered. And you know what
mm-hmm.
they do? They put it into a bomb. And you
always something to make a something to destroy someone.
And why? What's your mm-hmm. problem? Mm-hmm. Rather than, you know, to fix and to repair, you're developing elements that can further destroy, not mm-hmm. looking to repair and mm-hmm. to fix with the damage that has been done by your wicked technology anyway.
And you're just looking to make matters worse. As I say, Cottrell, there's no more signs of respectability and nobility with Dr. Jekyll. Mr. Hyde is in total control.
And who builds a wall around the White House? He didn't finish the Mexican wall. He's going to build a wall around the White House.
We got to build this wall around the White House, man. Because, you know, I know I didn't lit up some fires out there. And as Dr. Malcolm X said, he know it. Chicken come home to roost. Okay. He ain't no fool.
So they trying to get into Dr. Frankenstein's house because he done created a monster. But he created a monster.
It's still out there doing the same thing.
It's the puppet show, man. It's the finale to the puppet show.
Right.
Donald Trump ain't in control. Joe Biden won't be in control. It's the powers that be that are in control. And what do they want? Exactly. They want confusion so they could benefit in the financial markets. Are they benefiting in the financial market? Oh, absolutely. You're scratching your head trying to figure out how these people benefit in the financial market. Oh,
right.
It's a puppet game.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't understand the intricacies of the puppet game that they playing on a chessboard and you just a pawn.
Exactly. And these are some wicked people, Cartrell. Some very
really
wicked. Mm-hmm. All right, listen. What's that, Cartrell?
You got ball of confusion. He's talking about firing Fauci. So who are you supposed to listen to now? You fire Fauci, who are you listening to? And can you really trust?
They're going to listen to Dr. Adler. He's been on a Russian TV show. That's what he listens to next.
And you're going to be taking hydroxychloroquine and shooting bleach and putting lights in your body.
Listen to those. You may be. Because then you wonder why people's minds are like they are. Just look at their leaders. I'll tell you why they are. Their leaders ain't no better than they are.
What's the question? Who can I trust? You know who you're supposed to trust?
The Most High.
Okay. Bing, bing, bing. The million-dollar answer.
Based upon my experience today, and I'm speaking from experience. But today, I'm not going to go into detail with you students. It ain't your business. But I'm telling you what I know based upon my own experience. That's why you got to keep the Most High always with you all the time. Because some of you could jump off and before you even know it, just like the Godfather. I try to get away from this, and you try to pull me right back in. And you don't want to get back in it, okay? So that's why it's urgent and imperative that you keep Yah with you every day, 24/7, 365 days a year. Keep him with you. That being said, let's get into our devotional, intense, and the investigatory studies. Turn to the book of Bereshit, the 47th chapter of Bereshit. Because we need devotion. If we ever need it, we certainly need it now in this Western Hemisphere. We need these studies. Give you a few seconds to get there. Okay. May the Most High bless you by the reading and study, and most importantly, the application of His word in your lives. Then Joseph came and reported to Pharaoh, saying, "My father and my brothers, with their flocks and herds, and all that is theirs, have come to the land from the land of Canaan, and are now in the region of Goshen."
Where they came from?
They came from the land of Canaan.
Oh, okay.
And they are now in the region of Goshen in Mezraim. Some of you call it Egypt.
So why is that important?
Well, it's important because it was telling you where they came from. Their origin, where they originated from. And he was letting Pharaoh know that. They're not Egyptians. They're not coming from around these parts. They're coming from the land of Canaan, where they used to live. Now they're
Canaanites.
The Canaanites some of them are okay, but some of them are rather rambunctious, so to speak. You know,
I'm talking about their lineage, their roots. They came from Ham, just like Egypt.
Yeah.
The Hamites.
Well, the Hamites are just like the Mizraims. The Mizraims
are
him. Right. So just letting them know we come from a place just like this place. Although they're not your kind, they are your kind in a way, but not they're like a brand of cereal, but they're not Pacific cereal. You are, although Kellogg's make all these cereals, they're a different cereal from Kellogg's, but it's all under Kellogg's auspices, so to speak. You know, they different than y'all, but they part of y'all, so to speak. Different brand of cereal, but still Kellogg make them. And now,
and
the
they
reason,
not they not fugitives or refugees.
No, they ain't coming from no trouble. They ain't
right.
Run away from nothing. It's just a famine, and it's 2 years in the famine. It's hard on my folk. They had to get on wave. Come on down. I had to look out for them. And now they're in the region of Goshen. They're in our land, in your land, Pharaoh. I'm your second in command. And selecting a few of his brothers, because as we see throughout their history, he couldn't select all of his brothers because some of them talk too much. And so he selected a few of his brothers and presented them to Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to his brothers, "What are your occupation?" They answered Pharaoh, "We, your servants, are shepherds. We also, our father, a lineage of shepherds, so to speak. We have come," they told Pharaoh, "to sojourn in his land," not to stay. "A temporary process in this land. For there is no pasture for your servants' flocks, the famine being severe in the land of Canaan. Pray then, let your servants stay in the region of Goshen." They didn't come on there trying to run none. They came on there with humility, and they made a request. And then Pharaoh said,
"Hey, uh-huh. You followed the instruction of their brother, Joseph."
Exactly. Right.
What did Joseph tell him to say to Pharaoh?
Exactly what they just told him.
Exactly.
And they came with
more than
they came, right, and they came with a humble attitude. And they said, "Let your servants stay in the region of Goshen." Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "As regards your father and your brothers who have come to you, the land of Mizraim is open before you. Settle your father, your brothers in the best part of the land. Let them stay in the region of Goshen. And if you know any capable men among them, put them in charge of my livestock, since these are herders. Now, I got livestock, and obviously, from what I've heard, they're good herders. So put them in charge of mine. Any one of your capable brothers or their servants, put them in charge of mine. Let them herd mine." Joseph then brought his father, Yaqub, and presented him to Pharaoh. Yaqub greeted Pharaoh. And Pharaoh asked Yaqub, "How many?" I guess he was in wonderment. "How many are the years of your life?" And Yaqub answered Pharaoh, "The years of my life, the years of my sojourn on earth, it's a temporary thing, and you should see it as such. That's how your mind should always see a temporary situation, especially under this given climate in this Western Hemisphere, are 130 years.
What?
And then he, 130 years old he was at that time.
That's why
but
I was asking the question.
Yeah, because
how old are you?
Yeah, because he's long gone. Joseph, you fought in something? Did your daddy? And obviously, the Mizraim men didn't live that long, or Mizraim women. And so I guess he said, "Man, hold on. Joe, he got all them boys. They look old. You 40-something. How are you, mister? I'm 130 years old. And he probably said, "Man, you look good." You know what I mean? Oh, my man. Wow. And then, but look here. Here's one thing y'all got to realize about Yaqub. In answer to what Pharaoh said, he said, "Ain't like you think it is." He said, The year, he said, the years of my sojourn are 130. Few and hard have been the years of my life. I mean,
who made it hard?
Few and hard. What he said, it ain't like a whole lot of years, because even if it's a few, this just few. That ain't nothing. But all the time I've been here, it's been hard for me being a shepherd, going to Lebanon, had to leave my household of my father and mother to run off to go to Lebanon, and he mistreated me. And then had to get a wife that I didn't want. Then I had to work for her. Then get the sister to work for her. And then, no, my years have been few. Don't look at it like a whole lot, Pharaoh. It has been few and hard. My life been hard. Then I lost my son. Now I found him again. You know, few and hard. Simeon was locked up. Then he back with me. Then they wanted Benjamin. I thought he was going to get locked down. Then to come to find out, the son of the love of my life is still alive. It's been few and hard. It ain't been happy times. So don't get it twisted, brothers and sisters. You got to think that just because I'm a Yah, everything going to be easy breezy. Tiptoe through the tulips.
Don't forget about his brother Esau.
Yeah, and his brother Esau was at me. You know, my brother was trying to, you know, strike me down and whatnot, trying to put me on swole. You know, so I ain't had it easy. And so if you're looking to the rock you were hewn from, you shouldn't expect anything to be easy, but you will find that out when we go to Job's in our studies. And so he said, it ain't been easy, but that being said, I still trust in Yah. And that's what you ought to feel. You should always trust in Yah, no matter what the physical conditions that you may find yourself in. Always be totally dependent and trust in Yah, as Yaqub was. He said, few and hard have been the years of my life, nor do they come up to the lifespan of my... Now, I ain't got old as my father's. I mean, I'm young compared to they were. I mean, my life ain't come up to their lifespans during their sojourns. Then Yaqub bade Pharaoh farewell. It's okay. See you later, Pharaoh. And left Pharaoh's presence. So Joseph settled his father and his brother, giving them holdings in the choicest part of Mizraim, in the region of Ramses. As Pharaoh had commanded, Joseph sustained his father and his brothers and all of his father's household, a subsidiary. Down to the littlest one, they had substances. He gave them subsidiary. Now, there was no bread in the world. For the famine was very severe. Both the land of Mizraim and the land of Canaan languished because of the famine. Joseph gathered in all the money that was there. I mean, he broke everybody. Joseph broke everybody in the land of Mizraim. He had gathered in all the money that was found in the land of the Mizraim and in the land of Canaan as payment for the rations that were procured. And Joseph brought the money to Pharaoh, good man, honest man, to Pharaoh's palace. When the money gave out in the land of Mizraim and in the land of Canaan, all the Mizraims, all the Egyptians came to Joseph and said, give us bread, lest we die before your very eyes. For we ain't got no more money. All the money's gone. And Joseph said, bring your livestock, and I will sell it to you against your livestock. If the money is gone, he said, use your livestock as collateral. So depending on how much livestock you got, I'm gonna give you food for that livestock. But I'm gonna let you keep the livestock. But it's gonna be, you're gonna use that as collateral against what I'm gonna give you. I'm gonna see how many you got, four cows. Well, I'm gonna give you based upon how them four cows you got. Okay, you got a whole flock of sheep. Well, I'm going to give you this much based upon your whole lifestyle. It's collateral. Then I was.
It wasn't collateral. It was payment. It was bartering.
Uh-huh.
It was exchanging livestock for food.
Right. Okay, yeah. And I would sell to you against your livestock.
Now, who was taking care of the livestock?
How are you going to take care of some livestock when you can't feed them? They couldn't even feed their livestock. And so
he was taking care of the livestock. in Egypt.
Well, the
brothers.
His brother
came in.
Yeah.
Well, he told him. He said, we do cattle. We do cattle.
Yeah.
So he was getting cattle for food. And where was
right.
the cattle going? Was going to his brother.
Exactly. Who was taking care of them after that?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
They were herdsmen over
yeah.
livestock. So the people are
so
bringing
their
livestock.
Yeah. They were selling them
to
Pharaoh, right?
Joseph's brother.
Was taking care of them. So, yeah, I guess they would have some intimacy between Joseph's brother based upon those set of circumstances. It was, huh, man, they got my livestock. But in actuality, they were Pharaoh. They were just taking care of them for Pharaoh. So they bought the livestock to Joseph, and Joseph gave them bread in exchange for the horses, for the stocks of sheep and cattle, the asses. Thus, he provided them with bread that year in exchange for their livestock. And when
so they
that
have
year,
money, so
yeah,
livestock they, with the money.
Yeah, they bought it. And when that year was ended, they came to him the next year and said to him, we cannot hide from my Lord that with all the money and animals and stock consigned to my Lord, nothing is left at my Lord's disposal save our persons and our farmlands. Let us not perish before your eyes, both we and our land. Let us take our land. Okay, take us and our land in it exchange for bread, and we with our land will be serfs to Pharaoh. Provide the seed that we may live and not die, and that the land not become waste. So Joseph gained possession of all the farmland of Egypt for Pharaoh. Every Egyptian, having sold his field, became, because of the famine, was too much for them. Thus the land passed over the Pharaoh, and he removed the population, town by town, from one end of Egypt borders to the other. Only the land of the priests he did not take over, for the priests had an allotment from Pharaoh, and they lived off the allotment which Pharaoh had made to them. Therefore, they did not sell their land. When Joseph said to the people, whereas I have this day acquired you and your land for Pharaoh, here is seed for you to sow the land. And when harvest comes, you shall give 1/5 to Pharaoh, and 4/5 shall be yours as seed for the fields, and as food for you and those in your household, and as nourishment for your children. And they said, you have saved our lives. We're grateful to my Lord. We shall be serfs to the Pharaoh. And Joseph made it into a land law in Mizraim, which is still valid, that 1/5 should be Pharaoh. Only the land of the priests did not become Pharaoh's. Thus Israel settled in the country of Mizraim in the region of Goshen. They acquired holdings in it and were fertile and increased greatly. Yaakov lived 17 years in the land of Mizraim, so that in the span of Yaakov's life came to 147 years. And when the time approached for Israel to die, he summoned his son Joseph and said to him, do this favor. Place your hand under my thigh as a pledge of your steadfast loyalty. Please do not bury me in Mizraim. When I lie down with my fathers, take me up from Mizraim and bury me in their burial place, back in our land, the land to become our land, in the land of Canaan. And he replied to his father, I will do as you have spoken. And he said, swear to me. And he swore to him. And Israel bowed at the head of the bed. Well, there's a whole lot more to that story. And you would think that was the end of him, but no, he's got some blessing to impart. And not in this order, sequential order that you would think, Ephraim and Manasseh. You would think the blessing that he blessed him, but he knew through his connection to the Most High. Even when, I want to tell y'all this, but I can't get ahead of the story. Contrary, what say you, my brother and friend?
I say, why do you think it was important for Jacob to make Joseph swear that he bury him, not in Egypt, but in Goshen, in Canaan?
Because we are men of our word. Once you've given your word, he knew once Joseph had given his word, Joseph was going to go through with it. And to give an offhand remark and didn't swear by it, I mean, he can say, okay, well, you know, and I told Daddy that. But once you have sworn, once you have given a commitment before the Most High, you got to follow through on your word when you make that pledge. It's not an offhand.
So why was it important for Jacob to be buried not in Egypt, but in Canaan?
Because he wanted to be buried in the land of his people, the land that to become his people, the land of the Canaan, which was to become the land of Israel. So it was important to him to be buried in the land, and that connection with Yah in the land.
So my point is that he saw something that's important in the afterlife, where
exactly.
He didn't want his bones just buried anywhere. He wanted his bones where the Most High promised his fathers that they would own that land. And
exactly.
To show that he didn't have no fear of living or being buried in that land, he made his
right.
son swear that he would be buried in that land. Even though he had contention with the Canaanites when his son killed all the men in Shechem, he showed no fear of the Canaanites in the fact that he wanted to be buried where his father, Abraham, Isaac, had established themselves.
Exactly.
So, Joseph, we're going to see, made the same request to his brother. But I'm jumping ahead of the story. But it
right.
shows something about the importance of the afterlife and where
exactly.
they desire to be buried, not just anywhere, but in their homeland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that was important to them. And like Cartrell said, you know, we don't want to get ahead of the story. And I'm pretty sure some of you who take your studies as seriously as Cartrell and I, you probably already know by your studies, because you're probably on the same plane that we're on. With you can't get enough. It's just like Lay's potato chip. You can't eat just one. And sometimes, some days when you're studying, and you'll go to two or three chapters before you know it. So if you're on the same plane that Cartrell and I on. So, Cartrell, any more, my brother, before we move on?
Just like you said, if you're really enthusiastic, you should be in the book of Deuteronomy by now. But we ain't that enthusiastic. We take it chapter by chapter.
Right.
And we get the breakdown of it. So we see that the burial with Jacob was very important to him. And he made sure he went to the right person, Joseph, who had the power and the authority. And also we see that Jacob kind of like bowed down in submission to Joseph
mm-hmm.
at the end of his days. So
mm-hmm.
he kind of acknowledging the dream that that Joseph had.
Yeah.
Telling his father.
So he bowed to his son.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that was just so unique. He bowed before his son in his bed. I mean, that was just... You had to be there to respect it. You know, he was humble enough to bow himself before his son. He bowed his head before his son. I mean, that was so beautiful.
He sure wasn't bowing his head before any of his other sons. That's for
no,
sure.
No, no, no.
Unless it was in grief. Like, oh, my God, what do I do now?
Yeah. He bowed because he honored the dream that his son had.
Yes.
And he already knew his sons had bowed before him, Joseph. And now he said, I'm going to honor the dream too. He bowed before his son. I mean, that is so humiliating, humbling to honor the Most High through bowing before his son. And when Joseph said, they have bowed before me. And he said, I'm going to honor Yah too. I'm going to bow before you. And that is so humbling. And that should be the attitude that we all should have. Unfortunately, in some of our cases. We can't bow before anybody. We can't humble ourselves before it. We're just stuck on this false sense of pride and ego run amok, and a total hot mess with the result. Can't bow to nobody.
But it shows how powerful Jacob's humility was.
Exactly.
Because Jacob was a very powerful man, and he didn't bow down to none of his sons, except in this moment in time right here.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I got to acknowledge that my son became greater than me. Matter of fact, my son saved me and everybody else in my family. So he deserves that honor.
Right. He showed the love. He forgave his brothers. He took care of my family. They ain't had to want for nothing. They didn't have to go buy nothing. You know, we got a subsidiary where everybody had to pay for it. We ain't had to pay for none of this. I got to bow down to this man. You know, and I got to get
even
him.
Even though he's my son. How many fathers bow down to their son?
Well, a whole lot of us need to learn to, okay? But as I said, unfortunately, Cartrell, some of us can't humble ourselves and bow down to anyone for that, far as that is concerned, unfortunately.
And the reality is, your son may be greater than you, right?
And sometimes you just got to accept that.
Exactly.
And your daughter may be greater than you. And sometimes you got to accept that. You know, so sometimes you may have to bow before your daughter. You know, so just take it just like Yaqub, be humble. And that's why even tomorrow, be humble.
So we see the whole of Jacob's life. And in the end, he's bowing down to his son in humility.
Mm-hmm.
Which shows that he came to peace of mind.
Right.
Everything I went through, he kept his answers to Pharaoh short and sweet. He ain't going to the long, drawn-out dialogue. He was mainly concerned about that relationship that he had with Joseph. And to have lived 130 and then 17 years after that, I'm sure he was satisfied. To be able to see, you know, his grandsons growing up in front of his eyes, I'm sure that was satisfying, you know, to him in the last 17 years of his life.
And then, you know, one thing you just point out, Kadri, some of us need to learn how to shut our mouth. And that's part of the problem. We talk too much. And as you indicated, when Yaqub went before Pharaoh, he just answered the question. He didn't add nothing else. He didn't add, and then he said, okay, I see you, Pharaoh, Mr. Pharaoh. Okay.
Got up out of there.
Yeah, he got up out of there. He said, okay. He didn't linger around. He said, you know, I came to ask the questions that you want. I didn't give you no extra. And he's okay. Bye, Mr. Pharaoh. Nice meeting you. Bye.
He ain't trying to get no spot. If you like my son, you're going to like me even better because, you know, I'm greater than him. No, he didn't put that on the table.
Yeah, he said, this ain't my thing. This is my son's thing. And I'm going to get on that. I'm going to get on back to my house. You know, unlike some of us, some of us be trying, like you said, Carter, you're trying to get a spot.
You see Alonzo Ball's father?
Uh-huh.
You know, the basketball player, Alonzo Ball?
Yeah.
How his father gets in the way? Trying to get all the publicity.
Trying to get a spot.
Company. Yeah.
Yeah. You sure right, Cartrell. there's a lot of lessons to be learned here, Cartrell. Truth be told. A lot of lessons. And you know what, Cartrell? Like I told you when you and I had a talk earlier today, at the Most High, If you don't get immersed in the Most High, he can't catch you. He can't stop you from making a fool out of yourself. So that's why it's important and imperative that you get immersed in the Most High and learn how to humble yourself. Learn how to say when you're wrong, and I don't care to who it is. It could be your children. It could be the other folks of other nations. It could be folk within your nation. Learn how to humble yourself. Say you're wrong. Because all that ego run amok, your chest all beating your chest, that ain't going to work for you, okay? None of that is going to work for you. Because if the Most High ain't in it, it ain't going to matter because it ain't going to mean nothing, okay? Check yourself before you wreck yourself. Cartrell and fellow students, let's move on with our studies. Turn to the 24th chapter of Job. And Job, in this chapter, is complaining about the violence on the earth. And man, can we say that now? At least in this Western Hemisphere, we know that. We might not know that much about Britain. We may not know that much about Australia. We may not know that much about Russia or any other continent. But we certainly know a whole lot if you're from this Western Hemisphere, these United States of America, there is violence on the earth, yet we see there is by their information through their propaganda, their news organization. Let us get
and
started.
And especially for tomorrow, they're setting people up, people boarding up these stores.
Yeah.
This is so apropos for what's about to take place tomorrow, if it ever, occurs like they.
You had Abraham Lincoln doing a very volatile time. And then you had to put no fence around the White House. You got this cat.
You got a wall. The wall that he ain't built at the Mexican border. He got it in front of the White House.
Man, get off that mic, country. May the Most High bless you, brothers and sisters. Thank you, Contra. You sure right, though. Turn to chapter 24 of Job, and Job goes on to say, I'll give you a few seconds. Job goes on to say, since times are not hidden from the Almighty, no time is hidden from the Almighty, why do those who know him see not his days? Some remove landmarks you shouldn't be doing. They see flocks bowing and feed on and take folk flocks. They drive away the donkey or the fatherless. They take the widows, ox as a pledge. They push the needy off the road. All the poor of the land are forced to hide from them. And certainly that is the case as we speak. Indeed, like wild donkeys in the desert, they go out to their work searching for food. The wilderness yields food for them and for their children. They gather their fodder in the field. They glean in the vineyard of the wicked. They spend the night naked without clothing. I mean, they have a hard time. They have no covering in the cold. They are wet with showers of the mountain and huddle around the rock for want of shelter. Some snatch the followers from their breasts and take a pledge for the poor. They cause the poor to go naked without clothing. They take away the sheaves. A sheave. Now he can take away the sheaves from the hungry. These times, Job said, this is the type of folk running things in this universe. These kind of people. And they press out oil within their walls. They tread wine press, yet suffer thirst. The dying groan in the city. The souls of the wounded cry out. Yet Yah does not charge them with wrong, these wicked people, so it seems. There are those who rebel against the light. They do not know his ways, nor abide in his path. The murderers rise with the light. They kill the poor and needy. And at night, he is like a thief. The eye of the adulterer waits for the twilight, saying, no eye gonna see me. He disguises his face. And in the dark, they break into houses, which they mark for themselves in the daytime. They do not know the light, for the morning is the same to them as the shadow of death. If someone recognized them, they are in the terror of the shadows of death. They should be swift in the face of water, yet their portion shall be cursed on earth. They are the final reckoning. Their portion shall be cursed on earth, so that no one would turn into the way of their vineyards. As drought and heat consumes the snow and water, so the grave consumes those who have sinned it. There's going to be a fine analysis. And the womb shall forget him, and the worm shall feed sweetly on him or her. He shall be remembered no more, and wickedness shall be broken like a tree, for he preys on the barren who do not bear. It shows no good for the widow, but Yah draws the mighty away with his power. He rises up, But no man is sure of life. He gives them security, and they rely on it. Yet his eyes are on their ways. He's looking at their actions. They're exalted for a little while. Oh, it seems like they're having a heyday. And Job said they're exalted for a little while. But they reap what they sow. Then they are gone. They're bought low. They're taken out of the way like all others. They dry out like the head of a grain. Now, if it is not so, who will prove me a liar and make my speech worth nothing? Job is saying, so it seems that the wicked running thing, they got it good on Hollywood. Seem like they just having a heyday. The adulterers are doing what they doing. The folks stealing from folk, using folk, mistreating folks, subduing folk, dominating folks. Seem like they got it made. And it seems like they don't understand the nature thing. What goes around comes around. And those final sentences, Job broke it down to you like you're 4 years old. If you don't know, now you know. The end result, they reap what they sow. Karma, what goes around comes around. It's just that on that. They ain't going to get away. If I've done something wrong, I'm not going to get away. And Job is telling his three fair weather friends. Now, if you've done something wrong, you're not going to get away either, okay? Let me give you a lesson. Job is giving them a valuable lesson. You know, it seems like the wicked got it made. They ain't got it made. Because in the final analysis, the Most High going to judge. They seem like they're exalted for a moment. But in the final solution, it's a wrap. If you ain't right with Yah, it's a wrap. Contreras, what say you, my brother and friend?
He really broke it down like they was 4 years old because they can't really argue with him.
Because
they're seeing exactly what he sees and what he's saying because what he's saying is right. What he saw back then is what we see now. And we wonder why. Rich people who do wickedly, the Most High don't judge them and bring them down. They, you know, flourish and they wealthy. They, you know, fly around the world and do their thing. And we wonder why you ain't judging them. But we don't know whether or not if the Most High is judging them or not. And we don't really know the agonies that they're going through. But Job is pleading the cause. You ain't seen me do none of the things that I just laid out. I ain't robbed nobody. I ain't met with nobody's wife. I ain't oppressed the poor. I ain't put nobody, you know, butt naked. Matter of fact, I've done the opposite. I've fed the poor. I've helped the needy.
You ain't see me took nobody's wife and try to hide and whatnot. You ain't see me do none of that.
So he pleading his cause in a very, I say, lawyerly type way because they don't have no evidence. And he's like, yo, you can't accuse me without evidence. I'm innocent until you prove me guilty.
And he said, if they ain't prove me a liar, show me what I did. Prove me that I'm lying.
Who could argue with what I just said? Because we can't even argue with that because we've seen exactly the same scenario being played out in our lifetime that he just spelled out in this chapter. He's talking about children at the border being snatched from their parents.
We got evidence.
They didn't even know.
We ain't got no evidence with Job that he did nothing like that. We got evidence.
We know what happened to Job.
Right.
We know what happened to Job from jump, the scenario. Unfortunately, his friends don't. His friends don't know what happened to Job from jump. They're just analyzing the situation from their perspective. Right. Once you had big money, now you ain't got no money. You a bum now. You might as well confess and die.
Man, you ain't gonna talk about Job like that, Patrick.
Huh? That's basically what they're saying. You a bum. You not just a bum. You a wicked bum.
You a hobo. You're homeless. You're on the street. Your woman talking crazy to you. Your children gone. All your flock gone. You did something, Job. Job said, and Job, as Kadri wisely pointed out to you, Job laid out the causes of what disconnects man from Yah. He said, prove if I'm a liar that I did any one of the things that you suggested, inferred, or implied that I did. But you can't say that. You're running off at the mouth. You don't know what's up. Job said, prove it. But they couldn't.
So when we see homeless people on the street, you can't judge them because they're homeless on the street.
Right. You make an assumption.
Right.
You don't know what they went through. You,
or
you
who
don't
they
know
really
are. Bruh, I done ate out of garbage can. Okay? Okay? And if things get bad, you'll see me, you'll think of the rat in that garbage can. And you say, Sue, what are you doing in there? Hey, man, they ain't ate all the pieces in there. Sue, man, I done ate out of garbage can. I done had a heart. You know, so I'm just keeping real, bro. You don't know what's going on with folk. You don't know what makes folk home. It's not judging people. Okay?
Real talk. Mm-hmm. So we see Joe's so-called friends, they ain't got that lesson yet.
Right. Well, like another fella in New York City said, Carter, if you don't know, now you know. You don't know people's life history or her history. You only know yours. And you can only speak on what you know in regards to anybody. It's what you know. You can't speak on he said, she said, they said, hearsay. You can only speak on what you know. And what you know is your life.
But what I love about Joe is he's hitting them with the Muhammad Ali blows humbly.
Right.
He's humbly hitting them with Muhammad Ali type blows, Mike Tyson type blows.
Oh,
they
no.
Ain't really listening to what he's saying.
No, he ain't doing Mike Tyson. He doing rope-a-dope on him. He laying and clutching, and he coming out jabbing and hitting like he did George Foreman. Okay?
Uh-huh. Straight up. He's smooth, it is, man. He going through it, but he's standing up for himself. Like, why y'all picking on me? Trust me, you need to do a self-examination and examination of everything else around you. Stop focusing so much on me. I'm going through it. I'm trying to get right.
And I had to do that today, truth be told. I had to do that today. I had to put ego aside. And then once you put ego aside, you can communicate with anybody, mostly. Once you put ego aside and then have a conversation, you'll see what other people go through, what they're going through, what's bothering them and whatnot. They don't justify what they did or whatnot, but you'll see their anxiety. What caused other people to go through what they're doing? It once you put ego aside and humble yourself to Yah, then you can hear other people's story. But until you humble yourself before Yah, you can't hear nobody else's story. Like Cartier alluded to, it's all about you. You think you're something special, and you certainly are, but not in the corner of Yah. Truth be told,
Joe's friends be worried about.
They should be worried about Yah.
And themselves.
Exactly.
They're so worried about Joe, they ain't even thinking about their flaws and their fallacies and their weaknesses.
We all got them, Cartrell. We all got them.
Yep.
If you can't humble yourself, you'll never see them. You'll never see them.
That's a fact.
You think you're something special. And you certainly are not in the way you would think you are. You're something special, all right, but not in the way the Most High would have you be, because it takes humility to do a self-examination and to let Yah talk to you. So it takes humility to stop leaning to your own understanding. It takes humility to bow yourself as Yaqub did before his son, as many of our ancestors have done, many countless times, humble themselves before Yah. It takes humility. And if you ain't got it, you need to start praying for it, because you're going to need a world of it. Because therein lies your solution, humility. Being able to take a blow and lay on the rope, then come back, takes a whole lot of discipline. Muhammad Ali, as Cartrell and I alluded to, it took a whole lot of discipline for that man to lay on that rope and let Big George Foreman just hit him all kind of ways. Man, hit him so hard, made me twitch back in the day. Because Big George, man, Big George, but Big George wore himself out, just like these men going to wear that stuff out when it comes to Joe. They got him on the rope now. He's clenched up. He's throwing blows. But Joe going to come off that rope on him. And there's a time and place to come off the rope. Just like Muhammad Ali with the self-discipline he had to know when to come off that rope. And knock Big Joe out.
So Joe is showing mental and spiritual discipline.
Exactly.
Because if you let your friends wear on you, those words that they're saying to him will penetrate his spirit and his soul and destroy him, basically. They say sticks and stones may break my word, my bones, but words will never harm me. That's not really true. Words have, you know, power and effect.
Mm-hmm.
And they're bombarding him with these words. He could just give up and just jump off a bridge, commit suicide.
If he let him.
Yeah, if he let him.
And that's what people, this universe does, Kutcher. They try to put words on you, negative connotation. And those words become a curse. And they become part of your innate nature. You're lazy, you're dumb, you're stupid, you're ugly. You don't take care of your children. You don't take care of your wife. You don't own anything. You just trifle it. You're always going and buying clothes and fancy cars. You ain't taking care of your business. You just whores. You just slutty. And those words have affected us, Contrail.
And it's amplified today with social media.
Exactly.
It's not just a one-on-one conversation with me and you. Now you spread it to everybody in the world.
Exactly.
This dude right here is this and that. You can't take that back.
Right.
Now you're walking around with a spirit. You know, everybody's looking at you in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And you're always trying to clean that up. But the fact that Job has a positive mind, positive attitude, and his faith in the Most High Yah keeps him strong in the midst of all this adversity that he's facing.
Exactly. Well, Kadriel, that ends my commentary on chapter 24. And we waiting on you, my brother. I know as all the Psalms are wonderful, informative, and enlightening, and connecting to the Most High, we're waiting on another connection.
No question. All Yah's word is one, as is Yah. He's one.
Exactly.
We're going to read Psalms 80 today. And if I were in Job's shoes, I wouldn't talk to them three dudes ever again after the first conversation. It's like, I'm done. I'm out. I'm going to China.
We need that.
In the book of Psalms, Psalms chapter 80, it's a testimony of Asaph, and his prayer is always to our Creator, as is our King, and anybody else who puts a psalm in the book, the holy book, is always an appeal to the Most High. Hallelujah, I give praise to the Most High. Give ear, O Shepherd of Israel, you who lead Joseph like a flock, you who dwell between the cherubim, shine forth before Ephraim, Benjamin, and Manasseh. Stir up your strength and come and save us. So how coincidental is that? How tied to what we just read is that? Are we reading about Joseph? Did we read about Benjamin? And didn't the Most High save them? Yes. Restore us, O Elohim. Cause your face to shine, and we shall be saved. Saved by the power of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, being descendants of Ephraim, Benjamin, Manasseh, and Joseph. O Elohim of hosts, how long will you be angry against the prayer of your people? Y'all ain't hearing our prayer because we still got wicked ways. We're not trying to return to him. We're not trying to amend our ways and humble ourselves. So why should Y'all hear our prayers? Because we only pray to him when we're in serious trouble. And we say, oh, God, help me. No, y'all want your attention and your prayers every day, all times. We must give praise and thanks to the Most High for life and everything that he does for us on a daily basis. You have fed them with the bread of tears, and we cry on them every day, which is why we sing the blues. And he gave them tears to drink in great measure. Yes, we're very famous for the blues. Nobody sings the blues like our people sing the blues. You have made us a strife to our neighbors. Yes, any neighborhood we go in, we shoot with each other. And our enemies laugh among themselves. Why? Because they ain't got to shoot us. We shooting ourselves. Ku Klux Klan say we doing a job for them. They could just lay back and save their ammo. So they're laughing at us. They're mocking us.
Good job we're doing, Cadre. Rather good job we're doing.
No doubt. And no other community, you know, can really make the same claim. Restore us. Why? Because we've been destroyed. Restore us, O Elohim of hosts. Cause your face to shine and we shall be saved. That's the only way we're going to be saved, when Yah restores us and he makes his face to shine. When he makes his face shine, all the world is going to know the true creator of the heavens and the earth. When Yah restores us, that's part of his plan. That's part of the scenario. That's the outline for the future that's going to happen. But we want to be part and parcel of it. So we're asking, begging, pleading Yah to restore us and cause your face to shine. Cause your face to shine upon us, that we shall be saved. You have brought a vine out of Egypt, which is us. We the vine that he brought out of Egypt. You have cast out the nations and planted it. Yes, he gave us the promised land by kicking out the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, all these Semitic nations that he promised the land to our fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And he planted us. But it seems that we've been uprooted. You prepared room for it and caused it to take deep root and fill the land. The hills were covered with its shadow and the mighty cedars with its boughs. She sent out her boughs to the sea and her branches to the river. Why have you broken her down? Why have you broken down her hedges so that all who pass by the way pluck her fruit? The bull out of the woods uprooted, and the wild beasts of the fields devour it. So these are metaphors for the people who have devoured our land and took advantage of the wealth that's in the land. Return, we beseech thee, O Elohim of hosts. Look down from heaven and see, and visit this vine. Where's this vine out? Where's this vine now? This vine has been scattered to the four winds, to the four corners of the earth. And the vine which your hand has planted, and the branch that you made strong for yourself, it is burned with fire. It is cut down. They perish at the rebuke of your countenance. Let your hand be upon the man of your right hand, upon the son of man, who you made strong for yourself. Then we will not turn back from you. Revive us, and we will call upon your name. So when we're revived, we're not going to be calling under the false deities or false religion or idols. We're going to be calling upon the name of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, Yah. Restore us, O Yah of hosts. Elohim, cause your face to shine, and we shall be saved. So we know that when Yah causes his face to shine, the Elohim of hosts causes his face to shine, he's coming to save us. It doesn't say he's coming to save the world or all mankind. He's coming to save the children of Israel, the descendants of Joseph, Benjamin, Ephraim, Manasseh, et cetera, et cetera.
Et cetera.
That's in the book. It's written down. That ain't my philosophy. That ain't my doctrine. That ain't no hate speech. I'm telling you what Yah said. So we give all praise and thanks to the Most High, because the Most High has intentions to restore us and to save us. Praise his holy name. Hallelujah.
Hallelujah. Before we go, Kajun, I like you listeners to consider praying for us, our nation, your families, other nations, your neighbors. Because tomorrow, this guy's opened up Pandora's box, and as Malcolm X said, chicken do come home to roost, and I have to concur with Malcolm. So pray for peace and safety for us, peace and safety for yourselves, peace and safety for our brothers and sisters who are locked up in these prisons, those in the outer prisons, and for your neighbors and all nations according to the Most High will. And may the Most High bless you. And I'm going to ask Cartrell, my brother and friend, do we have any closing remarks? And then we're going to get ready to get out of here.
My prayers for peace for my people, for the world, that the Most High will intervene in our behalf, that he will show himself mighty before us and his word be true, that he would come and shine his face upon us and even save us out of the chaos that's taking place in the earth today.
Truth
I pray that he sent forth his guardian angels to all the houses of Israel, and that we all give praise and thanks to understand that he is the King, he is our creator, he is our maker, and that in our heart, soul, and might, we have to be as faithful as the men and women that we're reading about in these scriptures that we're going through.
Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Well, listen, we don't know where you're going. But may the Most High be with you. May the Most High direct and order your steps so you can stop leaning to your own understanding. And may the Most High give you humility, because humility is the key to open any door as far as the Most High is concerned. It is the key to open any door. And may the Most High bless you. Cartrell, thank you, my brother and friend. Thank you, fellow students.
Preparation for the king, and they line the sidewalks with every sort of shiny thing. They will be surprised when they hear him say, take me to the alley, take me to the afflicted ones, take me to the lonely ones that somehow lost their way. Let them hear me say, I am your friend. Come to my table. Rest here in my garden. You will have a pardon. Take me to the alley, take me to the afflicted ones, take me to the lonely ones that somehow lost their way. Let them hear me say, I am your friend. Come to my table. Rest here in my garden. You will have a pardon. Afflicted ones, take me to the lonely ones that somehow lost their way. Let them hear me say, I am your friend. Come to my table. Rest here in my garden. You will have a pardon. You will have a pardon. Oh, take me to take me.